May it please the court, I'm Matthew Singer here for Kelly Blanchett. May I begin?
Certainly.
Thank you, Your Honors. This case is important for at least three reasons that we see. The first is, this is a case of first impression in Missouri, so we're very happy to be here in front of you bringing this case to you. The second is, the decision that the Eastern District Appellate Court rendered puts Missouri in opposition to other circuits, such as Texas, who've already ruled on this issue, and creates a dispute in the UCCJEA. Now an act which was meant to bring states together with one form is being brought apart with different decisions from different courts saying that it applies differently in different jurisdictions. It defeats the whole purpose of the UCCJEA. And the final reason I think it's important is that somebody needs to look out for the best interest of these minor children. And I haven't seen that stated in any of these court orders yet. None of their interests have been examined by the court. As a matter of procedure, the home state under the UCCJEA, which both states have adopted, should rule. It is also a definition which says that a child born in that state is that is the child's home state. Hannah, the daughter in this, who is now 10 years old, has only lived in Missouri. As a matter of fact, had never left Missouri until she was age, I think, 4 years old. And Andrew, who is going to turn 11 years old tomorrow, has resided in the state of Missouri all except his first 1 year and I believe 3 months, which he resided in West Virginia. I'd also like to correct two errors that were stated in respondent's brief. First is Andrew was not born in West Virginia. He was born right across the border into Virginia. And the second was that when we initially filed this matter, there was not three judgments for us to file in St. Louis County Court. There were only two. The third one happened after we had already filed our action and the judge dismissed us and required us to go get a copy of that third judgment and file it. If you'll notice in our pleadings, we never asked for that third judgment to be entered. We simply did it because the court required us to do so to be able to file our action and in fact dismissed us for not having those things in addition to the judgments not being authenticated, them being certified instead of authenticated. So we went back and we got all three of those and we filed them with the court to bring our action. But we did not ask for the third one to be entered. As a matter of fact, in our request for findings of fact and conclusions of law, we specifically asked for our motion to modify to be granted. And the court denied that. So we are most definitely aggrieved here. In addition, my client, who's here with us today, lost time with her children and lost an amount of money in child support. She is definitely aggrieved by those two things. And the whole reason this action was brought is she was concerned for her children and their safety and their education and their 504 IEPs, which need to be taking place over the summer when they were in father's custody and she didn't believe they were being done. But we never even got to the merits of the case because we got kicked out procedurally where the court said they didn't have jurisdiction to determine custody over a Missouri child.
Now, your client sought the registration of these foreign judgments and they were registered by the trial court and now you're seeking to appeal from that registration. How are you aggrieved when you're the one who sought the registration?
Your Honor, we only asked two of those judgments be registered, okay? And then we ask that the court modify those in as much as it could for Andrew, but it has to for Hannah because it has original jurisdiction over her. And in other courts such as West Virginia, that order is void as far as Hannah is concerned. The Nestle case out of the Eastern District in 2015 rules that. A case where there is no jurisdiction is void and we can attack it at any time, at any place.
The Court of Appeals found that jurisdiction is determined under the Act when the custody proceeding commences. And here, since she wasn't born at that time, there was no home state. Missouri wasn't the home state when it commenced, nor was West Virginia. So something must be used, one of the tests other than the home state test.
Your Honor, what we would say is that jurisdiction cannot attach before a child is born. There's many cases that we've cited to that say that. The child must be born.
The original order that was entered in West Virginia, the child was born before that order was entered, correct?
The child was born before the final, yes, correct.
Okay, so the petition was filed, the child was born, and then there was an order entered.
Correct.
So why can't the state that originally enters that order contain language in their order that they're retaining jurisdiction for all those issues relating to custody, support, and visitation?
They could have, Your Honor, but there's a procedure that the UCCJEA requires, and that procedure is that they determine in the pleadings where that child was born, and then they look at these factors. And the four factors after the child was born, and as we stated, the jurisdiction cannot attach to somebody who's not born yet, so it must wait until the child is born. they need to go through the eight factors and find that it's an inconvenient, Missouri's an inconvenient forum and that West Virginia has jurisdiction. They didn't do that here. Both courts skipped over those eight factors. And the reason those eight factors are put in place.
Were either of those orders, were either of the two original orders of custody or visitation appealed?
I'm sorry, can you say?
Were the first two orders, which dealt with custody and visitation of both children, were either of those appealed?
No, Your Honor, they were not.
But is it your position Missouri's the home state because the Court of Appeals found it does not fall within the definition of home state, even if West Virginia also does not, that neither are home state?
You're right, Your Honor. And we would propose that the Court of Appeals erred because we have many cases that we cited that a court cannot have jurisdiction over somebody until they're born.
I understand. No, but that's not my question. There's four different bases for jurisdiction, and one is home state. And can you explain to me why Missouri is a home state under this definition? Because I don't see how it fits in.
Because under other case law that we've cited in our brief, Your Honor, that while jurisdiction, while the specific language of the law says that the jurisdiction to be determined upon the commencement of the action, the person is not there to take jurisdiction over at the commencement of the action. And so you can't just skip over that. There's not a person for the court to consider until that child is born.
Sure, so, I understand. But doesn't that mean that they don't? But why does that mean we change the definition of home state that we've adopted? Why doesn't it mean you have to look at that's why the act has fallback ways you determine jurisdiction when the first one doesn't work?
Correct, Your Honor, but those are for situations where there is no home state. In this,
right.
There is a home state. They just need to wait for the child to be born to produce that. And there are many other cases that say...
Well, but the definition says otherwise, right?
Well, you must read the UCCJEA must be read so that it makes sense together, okay? And we've got cases where the commencement of the action began, but there was no child at that time. And what the courts have said is that you need to wait for a child to be born so that you can plead that the child is born, and that is the commencement of the jurisdiction that has to take place. And the court cannot just say, well, we're gonna order it over this kid who may or may not be born at this time and place. At the time the court ordered that, there was a home state, and the court's required to make a home state finding at the time they have that order.
Now, Andrew's home state clearly was West Virginia.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, the fact that there was another child involved who clearly had the home state of West Virginia, how does that affect your argument?
It's difficult, Your Honor. That is one of the complexities of the case, is that we have two different home states here. And what's supposed to happen under the UCCJEA, which was written up by people who are much wiser than me, have been through many more of these than me, and they saw this happening. And what they say is, you need to consider these eight factors, and then a court can decline jurisdiction.
Yeah, why wasn't that argument required to be made way back at the original custody visitation order?
Your Honor, that was in 2003. I can't speak to that.
But that's my point. I mean, why when jurisdiction was determined at that time to be in that court, and that court to have jurisdiction, and there's no appeal of that, why doesn't that obliterate your argument? In other words, jurisdiction, usually it needs to be attacked early and often and preserved. Mm-hmm. And apparently it either was or wasn't, but that issue certainly wasn't appealed. And not only was there one order, but there's two orders in that court dealing with the custody and visitation of both of these children who are born to the same parents. And now some several years later, we're trying to make a jurisdictional argument when there has been a court that clearly had jurisdiction, at least that wasn't appealed for several years.
Yes, Your Honor. My client is a school counselor. She doesn't have this expansive knowledge of the law. The attorney she hired in West Virginia did not advise her of that.
Well, the question is subject matter jurisdiction something that can't be waived and can't be appealed, and that the fact that it wasn't, I mean, that it is jurisdiction determined in those first cases binding or is it not? And you're arguing those decisions are void, I believe.
Absolutely, Your Honor. West Virginia is a little different than Missouri, and we have a case in our brief which specifically states that jurisdiction may not be waived, estoppel does not apply to it. And this is a West Virginia case. They know this. If jurisdiction is questioned and it is not in fact valid, it can be attacked any time, according to Nestle.
But you're not saying that they couldn't have had jurisdiction over that child. You're saying they didn't make enough findings under the factors to justify it.
They didn't go through the required statute and the required findings. And I believe if they had, Your Honor, the reason those are there is that they would have pointed out to this court that the majority of the evidence regarding these children and their best interest is in the state of Missouri, where one of them has resided always and the other has resided for the past 10 years. How are you going to determine
How would they have made that finding originally?
Well, they wouldn't have,
Your Honor. It wasn't true.
No, you're right. And at the original finding, it wasn't true that, you know, that they had jurisdiction over Hannah either, but they made that finding.
Is it possible that at the time of the original judgment, the trial court could have applied these factors and found that West Virginia had jurisdiction over both children?
Yes, if Missouri had declined and the statutorily required
Well, Missouri hadn't been asked at that point, so that declining isn't an issue.
We have a case on that that says that there doesn't need to be a pending case going in order for you to have to follow the UCCJEA in that regard, because the statutorily required findings of those eight parts display to the court what you're supposed to be looking at.
So are you saying the court could not have found it had jurisdiction because there had not been an attempt to get jurisdiction in Missouri?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying they could have, but they would have had to require. They would have had to follow the statutory requirements, which they didn't do, and that's error. And the reason
why wasn't that required to be raised at that time when that order was entered?
Because of West Virginia law, Your Honor, which says that. You know, jurisdiction is not waivable, it's not estoppel.
If something goes to subject matter jurisdiction, every jurisdiction says it's not waivable, but there's a question as to whether this goes to subject matter jurisdiction or some lesser definition of it, which Missouri would say, you think.
Your
it may
Honor,
or may not go to subject matter jurisdiction in Missouri, but you're saying West Virginia treats it as subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, I think, yes, West Virginia's been very clear on this. And that it is, and that can't be waived. And so if they didn't have jurisdiction, how can they make a judgment? It's void. And so this is a very complicated case with facts that interplay here that make it difficult. But the statutory requirements are there for a reason. And they're so that the court can find, look, the court did look at all those things. And it found that Missouri was not the best forum, but those were ignored. And nowhere does it end, you know, nowhere are the children represented in this matter. The court made findings which make this judgment, I think, the West Virginia judgment, at least the last one, void on its face. They don't mention any other proceeding. They don't mention the best interest of the child. They don't make any findings of fact or conclusions of law.
All of which are things that could have been raised in West Virginia, including the jurisdictional question. Even under your argument, you could still raise it today in West Virginia. But why would you raise it here?
Well, Your Honor, because we believe the West Virginia courts just don't care. When they make findings about this, giving my client 8 days notice to go across and then default her when it comes to two children, I think that shows that they don't care. They're not interested in an adjudication.
But those aren't jurisdictional issues.
Well, it is when it comes to her service of the matter and the judgment which results. If she wasn't given due process, that judgment can't be registered here in Missouri.
And did she challenge that in West Virginia?
She attempted to challenge that in West Virginia, Your Honor. She retained counsel, and counsel told her, this is West Virginia, nothing you can do here. And at that time, we already had a Missouri case going.
Are you saying it's void as to both children or just as to one child? In other words, you have a good judgment as to one child, a void judgment as to another child.
Correct. And then the most recent judgment, Your Honor, we would say is void as to both children because she was not given due notice. 8 days is not enough time to retain counsel and have them appear for your objections in a case.
But you can ask for a continuance.
Well, how, Your Honor? If you're a pro se litigant, it's easy for us to call the clerk and say, hey, I'd like to speak to this judge. But a pro se litigant who's a teacher or a school counselor doesn't have that knowledge and shouldn't expect it to without retaining a counsel. Anything they say can and will be used against them, not necessarily in a criminal matter, but by opposing counsel.
And even after the default judgment was entered, has she challenged it and asked it to be set aside?
She did retain an attorney in West Virginia who she asked to do that, and he said there was nothing that could be done.
And that may or may not be right. And so you're telling me she has done that. She did nothing in West Virginia to try to set it aside on the claim of due process violations, inadequate notice.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor. I would say that she retained counsel there and asked them to do it, and they said nothing could be done. That's their professional opinion on West Virginia law, which I don't know well enough to say, but on my research, I would have to agree with you that something could be done there. However, whether it would proceed and get them anywhere, I don't know. The West Virginia attorney very clearly told my client nothing can be done.
Yeah, but nothing was filed with the court.
Correct.
Either asking for an extension of time, indicating she didn't have counsel, indicating she wanted to participate by telephone, or trying to set it aside at a later time.
Within the 8 days, yes, Your Honor.
No, any time.
Correct. I mean, other than my letters to opposing counsel in West Virginia.
But with the court.
Correct.
We're talking about the court.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor.
But there was nothing, again, back to the securing counsel. There's lawyers all over, but she never called the court or anyone to say, judge, I need time to get a lawyer.
No, Your Honor, she wasn't aware that she had that option. She was under the impression that she needed to retain counsel because she was in Missouri and wouldn't be able to appear there in person, which she immediately went out and attempted to do. But 8 days, you know, I don't know any jurisdiction that gives 8 days from the beginning of an action, whether it's a motion to modify or whatever, where they can come up with a final judgment.
But that's a voidable issue, not a void issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you have to challenge it to enforce your rights, as opposed to having it be a void judgment for lack of notice.
Right, Your Honor. We're challenging it here under Missouri law because we don't believe it deserves full faith and credit for that.
Any other questions? Your time is up. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
I was concerned about the children. Are the children united? Are they, like, separated? Or are they in the same custody with the same parent? Or?
No, they're living here in Missouri with mom.
Together? Okay.
I'm also happy to be here, but not because it's a matter of first impression, because I don't think you need to get to that point.
Did you speak closer to the microphone?
What's that?
Speak up, please.
Oh, I think that the case should be dismissed because the appellant is not aggrieved under the statute. I think the Court of Appeals got that one thing wrong. The Court of Appeals said that they were aggrieved because the trial court found denied the motion to modify. But the motion to modify is not being appealed, or that ruling is not being appealed. There's no point assigned for error that the court erred in not granting the motion to modify. So all the court did was grant what the appellant requested.
They asked him not to register the third judgment, and the court and they're saying that was improper.
In their initial pleading, that's what they did. The court dismissed the initial pleading, gave them 30 days to refile it, and asked that all three judgments be registered. They followed the direction of the trial court, and now are complaining about that, but they could have appealed that order. They did not. They voluntarily followed the court order and filed a second amended petition, and they put all three judgments
before
the court.
And if the third judgment is void, or if all of them are void, it doesn't matter, we don't give them full faith and credit, opposing counsel says. Can you address that?
Yes, I'm saying you don't even get to that issue because they're not agreed.
But can you get to that for us, please?
Okay, sure. It's true. If the judgment as to Hannah is void, then the judgment cannot be enforced as to Hannah. But it's not void, so I'll go into that. That's the matter of first impression. To begin with, I think it's important to recognize that there's a strong presumption of validity. This court has recognized in Phillips v. Fallon that presumption is rebuttable only with the clearest and satisfactory evidence. It's a heavy burden. There is no error claim for the West Virginia custody orders as to Andrew. There's no error claimed as to the property division that's contained in that first judgment. So we're talking about bifurcating the order. That's number one. Yeah, you mentioned under Webb in 2009, Missouri would automatically hold that there's subject matter jurisdiction and only discuss the issue of statutory competence. I have to candidly admit that may not be the case in West Virginia. It probably is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. But the initial jurisdiction statute under the UCCJEA does indeed list four different bases of jurisdiction. The home state jurisdiction is only one of the four. The West Virginia UCCJEA and Missouri. The operative six-month time period is measured from the date of filing and not the date of judgment, so there is no home state jurisdiction on the date of filing.
Can you please address opposing counsel's argument that states have added a gloss to the act that says where the child is born after the suit is filed, that you look at where the child was at the time of birth to determine home state rather than at the time the action was filed?
There are. Texas is one of them. Those are not well.
Can you speak up?
I'm sorry. There are.
I know it's too short for you. I apologize.
Sorry, I'll put this up. Texas is one of them, but there are other states such as Kentucky and Indiana, which is mentioned on page 19 of the respondent's brief, holding just the opposite.
Can you address the policy pro and con on that?
They recognize that home state jurisdiction does not end the inquiry, and therefore it's not necessary to create new law about unborn children. The statute on the face states that the time is to be measured from the date of the commencement of the action. So if there are unborn children and there is no home state jurisdiction based on the plain reading of the statute, we move to the second prong, and there are four prongs. There's no reason to get into this discussion about you know, whether life begins at conception, for example, in Missouri or not, when the statute addresses other ways to acquire jurisdiction, and that's what this, that's what the Court of Appeals did, that's what Indiana, that's what West Virginia does, that's what this court should do.
Is one reason case, is in this case there's two orders for which jurisdiction over both children was never contested, correct?
In West Virginia, nothing was ever contested.
Right. So this is, they've been operating under two orders that were never, where jurisdiction was never contested.
In West Virginia, right.
And is it clear, even if there wasn't home state jurisdiction, that the other prongs in the statute provided for jurisdiction over both children?
I think so.
So what has occurred, if anything, that would cause West Virginia to lose jurisdiction?
Nothing.
Do they have anything in the order where they specifically, like some of these orders do, say that they are retaining jurisdiction?
They never lost it. No.
I understand.
No. But under the UCCJA, they do retain jurisdiction unless some other state acquires it. And West Virginia is called upon to decline
that?
It. I'm sorry?
Is there a provision that says that?
In both UCCJAs mm-hmm. there is, yes. Which is why the motion to modify was denied. Now, there is a provision that allows West Virginia to relinquish that exclusive jurisdiction, but they were never called upon to do so. One reason is to prevent the unreasonable and absurd result of bifurcation in this case as recognized by the Eastern District. That's compelling enough. But there's no question that Missouri not only couldn't have been the home state at the time of filing, Missouri couldn't have been. But it also could not have had jurisdiction under the second test, the significant relationships test, because the child wasn't born.
Going back to that, you said that because the home state prong didn't cover, one of the others could. One did?
That's what I'm talking about now. I think that the second significant relations test doesn't apply. The third one, where they decline, where another state who has jurisdiction declines the jurisdiction, doesn't apply.
But
so the fourth one
applies. Are you talking about for Missouri or for West Virginia?
I'm talking about for Missouri.
Talk about West Virginia having jurisdiction. Number
four. Number four is what's called the default provision. And what the Court of Appeals recognized in this case is that by process of elimination, since the first three don't apply, Hannah necessarily falls under the fourth category. No other state satisfied the criteria for jurisdiction under the preceding alternatives at the time of the commencement of action, and therefore the fourth provision, which is the default provision, states that the state where you file the action can acquire subject matter jurisdiction. Both states have that same provision. There's no material difference between the UCCJA in Missouri and West Virginia in that regard. There's no question that the UCCJA in both states does provide for subject matter jurisdiction under the fourth prong, where the first three prongs are not applicable, and they're not. All the appellant is arguing is that the first one is not applicable, home state jurisdiction. That doesn't end the inquiry. The appellant would like it to end the inquiry, but it doesn't.
Well, he's saying Missouri was the home state for the last born child.
That would require a complete change in the law. Require you to interpret the statute differently than its plain meaning.
What if that argument would have been made way back in the beginning? Wouldn't it be different if the argument would have been way back at the beginning? If the mother had tried to file some action in Missouri relative to the second born child, at that point in time, the courts would have had to communicate under the Act, correct? Even though one was filed first.
That's an interesting question. I don't think that the UCCJA compels the court to communicate on its own sua sponte. Somebody has to ask.
Well, that's my point. The mother
asked West Virginia. Nobody did.
Had the mother asked at that time?
Yes. Then
there would have had to have been some communication.
Yes.
Even though the child was not born when the dissolution action was filed, she was born by the time the dissolution was granted.
Yes.
True.
Yes.
So wouldn't it be like illogical or impractical for a court to grant custody orders as to one child and not the other?
Yes.
When they're resolving the entire dissolution and custody issues?
Yes, and that unreasonable and absurd and difficult result is why the Court of Appeals found primarily that we don't want to go there for that reason. But I'm saying that aside from that practical nightmare that would create, have one state litigating one child and the other, that That isn't what the law provides. The law doesn't compel you to get to that point because there is subject matter jurisdiction by West Virginia. I don't think that's debatable here. Under the fourth default provision, there is jurisdiction. It's important to remember also that even if this court were to agree that subject matter jurisdiction was lacking over Hannah in West Virginia, it still had subject matter jurisdiction over Andrew. It still had subject matter jurisdiction to divide the property. That doesn't mean that those three judgments should not have been registered. They still should be registered, even if the custody rulings on Hannah were held invalid and unenforceable, because this isn't an appeal of any trial court ruling to enforce the custody rulings on Hannah. It's only to register the judgments. That's all that's being appealed here, which would still be entirely proper. How else could the undisputedly valid portions of the judgments be entered here? You can't register a half a judgment. You register the judgment. So even if you say that the West Virginia court lacked subject matter jurisdiction to enter the custody orders as to Hannah, all that does is make those orders unenforceable in Missouri. It doesn't mean the judgment shouldn't be registered. The judgments still get registered, or else there's no other way to enforce the valid portions of those judgments. He's asking that the judgments not be registered after he asked for them to be registered. Let me just say a few words, if I may, about the personal jurisdiction over the second modification order. The Eastern District's research on this issue is exhaustively set forth in footnote 6 of its opinion. It appears that as a motion to modify, that West Virginia treats that not as an independent action, and that only 7 days' notice is required when respondent is personally served, as she was here. Mother had 8 days' notice. As for the fundamental fairness and due process issue, I'm not going to start going into all sorts of stuff that aren't in the record here, but the Court of Appeals, again, found what was in the record. I'd just like to read a blurb of that. We recall that Kelly was no stranger to the forum. She was a West Virginia resident when the divorce action commenced. She appeared in person and by counsel at the original hearing. She appeared telephonically and by counsel in the first modification. Although she claimed she was unable to obtain local counsel on 8 days' notice before the second modification, she had ample opportunity within that time to arrange to participate in the hearing telephonically or at the very least to request a continuance. She did neither. She elected not to appear at all. Additionally, she could have moved to set aside the resultant order. She could have appealed it in West Virginia. She did not. Given these particular facts, we find that Kelly received reasonable notice and an opportunity to be heard sufficient to satisfy due process. And then in addition to that, I think it's sufficiently.
Now, I know that your worthy opponent said the judges in West Virginia are unfair. I haven't seen any facts of that. I mean, in Missouri, I had a case with Michael Scott, and I was representing a client and went in there, and the other parent, they didn't have a lawyer. Michael Scott said, "You got time to find a lawyer." I mean, it's right. If it was presented to the judge and said, "I don't have a lawyer. I need some time to get a lawyer." Even if you're pro se, unless the judges in West Virginia are just categorically unfair, it's just, I don't see how that couldn't happen.
And I think we also have to recognize that the West Virginia court knew that there had been 8 days' notice given. Why would we present that the West Virginia court deliberately ruled in the face of insufficient notice? I think that's just absurd. And also, I should mention that personal jurisdiction is waivable. It's not in the same category as subject matter jurisdiction, and they did nothing to try to attack that issue in West Virginia. There's a strong presumption of validity of these judgments. That presumption has not been rebutted. Just because this child was not born at the time the action was filed doesn't render the order invalid as to Hannah, because that's not the sole basis upon which the court in West Virginia can acquire subject matter jurisdiction. They can also acquire subject matter jurisdiction when no other state is the home state of the child, and when no other state has significant connections at the time of the commencement of the action, and when no other state that does have jurisdiction has the other thing is totally inapplicable, where another state with jurisdiction declines to keep it. That doesn't apply at all, because no other state had an action pending.
Now, the burden to overcome full faith and credit has been pretty high, I bet.
The burden of what?
Overcoming full faith and credit.
It's very high, right. That's That's what I'm pointing to initially. That's what I was pointing out with the Phillips v. Fallon case, that you said that there had to be the clearest and satisfactory evidence to rebut the presumption of validity. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. No other questions? Thank you.
Your Honors, I'd like to clarify a few points because it seems like you spent a lot of time on them, and I'd like to give you the case law. Arnold v. Price and Walter Burke out of Texas, which pretty much exhaustively discussed this, specifically say there can be no pre-birth actions. And the reason there can be no pre-birth actions is it's not the determination of when the divorce was filed. It's the custody proceeding involving that child. And a custody proceeding involving that child can't be brought until that child is born. And that's exactly what those cases say. And if Missouri decides otherwise, now we're in conflict with other states that have UCCJEA.
Are we in conflict with Kentucky and Indiana?
Those are not under UCCJEA, Your Honor. Those are under UCCJA, which allow a balancing test of a number of figures that don't include the home state. And the Kentucky, I don't think, is even under the UCCJEA. That's another law altogether. I'm sure your diligent clerks will find all this out by researching these cases.
And opposing counsel is not arguing anybody gets jurisdiction before a child's born. He's saying nobody qualifies as the home state as to a child that wasn't born. So you go to the other bases of jurisdiction.
And we disagree with that because
I understand, but that's a different issue.
Right. But the definition of it also says that there must be a human, and there's very clear language on what a human is at this point. We're not going back into fetuses.
I'm saying once the child is born, a court has to acquire jurisdiction. Nobody can do it under the home state definition because neither West Virginia or Missouri meets the home state definition as to the child once she is born.
I would contend they do, Your Honor. We have cases that say that when the child is born, where they are born is their home state. That is exactly the definition of the home state.
Assume for sake of argument that two children born of a marriage had separate home states. How would that somehow divest one state from having any subject matter jurisdiction over the other child?
Well, the UCCJEA lays that out, and they use the language shall, which means the court shall follow these things. It's not, you know, they would like to, they're not going to, and it says they have to consider all these eight factors.
They make these findings, and not that they don't have jurisdiction, but they have to make findings.
They have to make the findings before they give, one court takes jurisdiction and one court gives up jurisdiction. And the listings, the eight things they have to list, specifically kind of bring the judges together. So even if the West Virginia right. court said, look, I've got, look at
there
these
was,
eight factors.
But there was no Missouri court. Yeah. Who's he going to call?
Your client could have, at the time, could have made these arguments. And at that point in time, the courts would have had to talk, correct? I mean, that's the way the statute is designed.
If she was aware of it at that time, you are correct, she would have to, Your Honor. But she wasn't aware of it at that time. And because of Nestle, we can attack this at any time in any place. And so that's our reason to be here today. And we're really hoping that this court will consider the best interest of the minor children. The West Virginia judgment sure didn't do that. It didn't even mention that there was a pending Missouri action in there. Missouri requires you to do that so that the courts can notify, you know, everybody what's going on, and the judges can confer as they're supposed to under the UCCJEA. And if they did that,
how are the best interests of the children affected, whether or not it's in West Virginia or Missouri? Seems like the children are united. Is a brother and sister, and is there any evidence that the mother's not a good mother or the father's not a good father?
That was part of the concern, Your Honor, that we never got to bring in our modification because we were kicked out on a jurisdictional issue. And the whole case, and you don't see this in the briefings because it was the background of the case, the children came back from father's visitation time and the young boy had naked pictures of the young girl on his camera. And the mother was concerned about visitation. So there absolutely were those issues. We just never got to address them because we got kicked out before that. The Missouri court wasn't even interested in hearing what had happened and whether they could protect these children or whether they should.
Could your client go to West Virginia and file a motion to modify based on that evidence?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with West Virginia law. I can't state for sure. She could, but I don't know why she would expect a result different than what she's receiving over there, which is what the court has not at all, even in the last judgment, ask about the children or what was in their best interest.
And that's the judgment where she defaulted.
Correct.
Okay. Case will be submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.